This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris with the Norris Group. We are here with somebody else with a really fantastic name, Aaron Mazzarello.
Yeah. We have so much in common. So much.
Do you, living on the East Coast for a while,
We've both done that.
Did you live on the East Coast?
I'm from New York. Yeah.
And did you say Aaron out there?
People said that to me, but I have a very neutral, I think, neutral accent. I don't think I really have that East Coast accent.
I don't think you do at all.
I'm a blend. Like I kind of.
I used to introduce myself out there, and people would look at me funny. They're like, "Aaron, like the girl." I'm like, "Oh, sorry, Aaron." They're like, "Oh, like the Old Testament Bible." I'm all, "Yeah, apparently."
A-I-R-E-N.
Some people are really hardcore about it.
Aaron.
Oh, New Yorkers have the East Coast has the best accents anyway. Aaron Mazzarello, you are entrepreneur, real estate investor, marketer. You come at this from a different angle than some people do. So what's your background?
That's a loaded question.
That's okay. I'm here for it.
I just high school delinquent and did the military to escape that East Coast vibe. I was stuck in the mountains, Western Massachusetts, and I had no idea what I wanted to do. Zero. I mean, I was in high school like clueless. So.
What branch of the military?
Navy. Did six years in the Navy.
6 years?
Yeah, 6 years.
Where were you stationed?
Two in San Diego, which is ultimately why I ended up in California. I'm like in boot camp doing push-ups, looking at palm trees, and I'm just smiling. I'm like, this is the best experience of my life.
Worst boot camp ever.
And the planes are flying over every 30 seconds, so they got to stop talking because they can't. So I was just like, I was elated. It was so amazing to be there.
And that was your first time ever in California?
Yeah, it was. I'd been to Florida once on just a short Disneyland trip, but
it's not a dry heat.
I don't care what they say. But yeah, I came to California and I knew while I'm doing push-ups, I said, "Yeah, I'm going to end up in this state. I love it here. It's so amazing." So then I went to Japan for 4 years. And then I got out and I stayed in Japan for a year and ended up in the jungles in Thailand trying to just demilitarize myself, deprogram.
Really?
I was like dreadlocks and flip-flops. At one point my flip-flop broke. It was hardcore. I was like,
wow.
But I was in the Gulf 3 times and
so
it was just like I needed to deprogram, I needed to demilitarize myself. And I was in the jungle, I had dreadlocks down my back, I had no shoes, it was bad.
Wow, that's an indigenous action there.
Bananas and papaya and hanging out with monkeys. I was out there.
Why did you ever come back?
I at my core, I'm an entrepreneur. As a kid, I grew up with Michael J. Fox on Family Ties, and I loved this character, right? Alex P. Keaton, was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was obsessed with that guy. Like, I just wanted to do that. I wanted to go out and do big business, you know? And I'm from a small town of just white people, like white mountain people, hillbillies, right?
Right.
And I was just like, man, I gotta get out of here. I want to go do some cool, big stuff. And that was always in my brain. Like, I want to go do stuff. So I think at one point, at the time, my girlfriend, but now my wife of like 20 years, we were in Bali, and I just said, you know what? I think I just need to go back to the States and go to college. I just need to do something. I can't just keep doing this. Although I had saved a ton of money when I was in the Navy. I was, it's crazy. I left the Navy with which is not a lot of money today, but this is the early 90s. I had 60 grand saved up, and very few people leave the military with that kind of money saved.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So it was great because I would go to the bank and there was a lot of Filipino women who were working at the bank and they're always like, "Hey," like they see my account. I was like, "All right, now come on." Wonderful.
Are you
people.
Single?
I was bartending. I was moonlighting bartending and I got paid because it was a government job. I was working for MWR, Morale, Welfare, and Rec. I got paid like $7.50 an hour. This is like 92, 93, which was good money.
Okay.
Plus I got tips. I was bartending, so I never got less than $100 a day in tips, and I got military pay. And I was a rescue swimmer, so I got hazardous duty pay, right?
Dang.
And so we'd go to the Gulf. I was in the Gulf for a year and a half, and there was no taxes when you're in the Gulf.
Right.
So I lived off of just my tips because it was cash. So all my Navy pay and all my pay from the club, I just banked it. I just kept sticking in the bank.
Good for you. Wow.
And then I came out to California. After college, I used my GI Bill, so I had no student debt.
Where'd you go to school?
Which is an option if you're thinking about going to college. You could use the GI Bill and not get all that debt that everybody's so freaking out about.
That's really true. Where'd you end up going to college?
Just the in my hometown, yeah, a crappy little state school.
You know what?
Sometimes it's called MCLA, so if I just kind of like, MCLA?
They just assumed? They're like, yeah, oh, you're fancy.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah, I'm educated.
What did you study?
I was double major, computer science and biology. And I really wanted to get into cybernetics. I know this is crazy stuff. This is the early 90s, and I wanted to do cybernetics, which was like creating robot prosthetics, right? I was like obsessed with this.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So, but at the time, there was only one school for a master's degree in that field, and it was in London. And I had been to London, and I did not want to go back to London. I was like, I think I'm just going to, you know, get out of school and go to California. And we sold everything in our house. We had yard sales for like 3 weeks in a row. And then the last day, I was just like, I'm like, if you buy that, you got to take this. I was just giving things away. And we loaded up what was left in a U-Haul, and we drove across country. It was me, my wife, a dog, and three cats in a car.
Oh.
And the car broke down in Arizona, and we just basically hitchhiked to California. I'm like, the hell with it. Just leave everything.
With the animals?
We had a friend there that we could leave the animals. So we left the animals. Yeah, we just left it all.
I'm very visual, so I'm picturing you guys in the backup truck with, like, cats.
And yeah, we came to California in, like, a Ford F-350 work truck.
Oh, my gosh, that's great.
And I was homeless. We slept on a dude's living room floor. It was this guy had rented a house in Irvine, a small two-bedroom house, and he was in one bedroom. And there was a dude and his wife and their dog in the other bedroom. And then me and my wife were in the living room on the floor.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm an all-in kind of guy, man.
Apparently. So you get here and... I mean,
no job, no prospects. Didn't really like programming computers. So, yeah,
I could not handle it. Looking at code all day, I know just enough HTML because I grew up, you know, building websites.
Sure,
and I just know I hate it. So
I could probably still code a website in HTML.
Everyone's pointing and laughing.
Which is not a language. If you're a coder, you'd be like, "That's not a language."
So. I know. So back in the day it worked, but so you land in California. So how did you end up in the real estate field?
So I got into the guy that the house, the one who was on the lease for the house, he actually had started a construction company. Basically they were window subcontractors. They were selling windows, and that is a racket. Like if you think you can make good money in real estate, windows is crazy. We were wholesalers, and I'm doing air quotes. Our markup was like no less than 25%.
Oh,
on the wholesale. And the contracts, I was my primary client was the Irvine Company, Fairfield Development, Wormers Construction.
Hello.
We're doing huge apartment projects, right? Which isn't even the good money. That was good money, but the single family housing tracks, that's where the real money is, because you do like three plans. There's three models, mm-hmm. and then there's a couple different elevations for each model. So you end up with like, maybe there's like 12 different like spreads of windows you have. Like, I don't know what it's called. Like there's 12 sets of window models, right?
Okay.
And they just repeat it hundreds and hundreds of times. So they're like, yeah, we need 52 of those, 12 of those, 10 of those. And we just shipping windows like crazy. And we didn't get into that until the end. But even in the multifamily world, I was the only sales rep in the company, and I don't think there was ever a time where I was running less than 30 jobs all over the state of California.
Wow.
And I was getting paid 5%. I got into real estate because I had an income problem.
Needed write-offs?
Yeah, I had no write-offs, right? So I'm paying like, I think my estimated quarterly taxes were somewhere around $30,000 to $40,000 every 3 months. I was sending those checks to the IRS. And I was in my CPA's office. He's down on Beach Boulevard, and he had a lot of professional athletes that he represented, right? So I'm in there, and I'm just, like, so unhappy. He gives me these statements, like, yeah, here's your quarterly tax estimates for the next year. I was just like, this has got to stop. I'm bleeding to death here. This has got to stop. And he's like, well, you don't have any write-offs. I'm an estimator. I use a ruler, and they never wear out, and a pencil. I mean, how many pencils can I buy? Go to Costco and get a palette? I mean, he's like, well, you know, you leased your truck, so you got that. Oh, great, $350 a month.
Right.
Awesome, right? So I had nothing, no write-offs. And he's just like, I don't know what to tell you, you know? He's like, you get an office. I said, well, what do your other clients do who are in this situation? And he's like, yeah, they invest in real estate. I was like, I'm going to go buy some real estate. So that's how I ended up buying my first rental property. It's actually the house I still live in.
Oh, really?
In Riverside, yeah. And this was supposed to be a short-term thing. I moved to Riverside because I had dogs, and I was living in a townhouse in Irvine.
Yeah.
And I got tired of taking them for walks. I was just like, I'm just going to open the door and let them out. And the tenants moved out. My wife was out of the country.
Good call.
And when she got back, I'm like, surprise, we don't live in Irvine anymore. We live in... Well, she brought the dogs home, so it's on her.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Oh my, that's unusual. Yeah. All right. So,
so I've been in real estate ever since as you know, construction kind of tanked in 2007, and I had already gotten in with the wholesaler that called earlier when we were on the phone. I'd gotten in. I was kind of had moved up on his buyers list to the number one guy because most other people were tapping out, but I didn't know any better. So I just kept buying. I was like, I'll take it. I mean, the market was, you could still sell a house.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And then I got caught with a couple of them when the market really crashed. I still have one of those. I think I still have one of them.
But, yeah.
But HARP came out, you know, it was crazy because you could call and get a loan over the phone. You just tell them, I make $300,000 a year. And they'd be like, oh, okay, we'll give you a loan. I was doing that over and over again, right? Wells Fargo, all these big companies were just writing loans.
You called, you must be alive. Here you go.
You must be. I remember meeting one lady at Starbucks, and I just went to Starbucks and I signed all the paperwork and they wired like $200,000 in my bank account.
Oh my gosh.
It was crazy. So, I mean, it really was the wild west of lending. And I think people today don't understand that. You hear a lot of people say, oh, the crash is coming. It's like, so I think, like, how long have you been in real estate? And they're like, oh, 8 years. I'm like, so you don't know. You just think that what happened was normal.
Or
like, try to get a loan over the phone and meet at Starbucks to do the paperwork again. That doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were like 10-year interest only. I mean, you know, it was crazy. So
it has never returned. I mean, the last refi a year ago that I did, 225 PDF documents, every HOA, every bank statement, every property. I mean,
I've tried to do multiple. I mean, a lot of my friends are doing refis with credit unions and things like that. And I try to go through that process, and it's just it's a financial colonoscopy, right?
That's a great way to put it. It really is, right?
So I have one now, and I could go that route, or I could call Craig, which I did. Actually, he called me. I was in the park. He was like, hey, Aaron, I'm actually in your parking lot.
He didn't know you were going to be here
today. I'm not coming
in today.
I was like, now that you're telling me everybody's got the flu, I'm kind of glad.
Exactly.
So I say, you know, I'm just going to go through the Norris Group. I'm throwing a shout out to you guys, but I love your service. And Craig is like, man, it's been so amazing to see how long, you know, you've been in the business and the people that you're associated with, the people that have come up when you and what you guys have done. And I was like, dude, I couldn't have did it without you. I mean, I had access to some HELOCs back then, but as soon as 2008 hit, they froze all those. So I would have been out of business, but you guys were there. So it was been phenomenal that you guys, and still today, I'm, like I said, I have a house in Riverside, it appraised for $475,000. I bought it in 2008 for like $140,000. It's a duplex downtown, so it's a prime piece of real estate.
Oh yeah, I think you're gonna be so happy.
Yeah, and I only owe $60,000 on it now. And Craig's like, "How much you want to borrow?" And I was like, "I don't know, $290,000." He's like, "Sweet, we'll make it happen, right?" So you're gonna wire, like, you know, after I pay off the first, I get like $220,000 tax free wired into my
crazy
account.
This is my first cycle too as a real estate investor. You know, I go from being an actor in New York City. I come back. I never thought I'd work for the Norris Group. So one of the most challenging times was in 2009, just having to raise at the time. I think we were one of the first lenders that had a long-term program. We're one of the few hard money lenders still around, and raising 8-year loans at 9.9%, that was so challenging. And
I was Googling one time. Sorry to jump in, but
no.
I kind of always assumed, like, oh, you guys are just lending your own money out. Then Bruce has pockets that just drag a mile behind him on the ground, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was online one time and I was Googling, like, raising money. And it was like a Norris Group, TNG. I was like, oh, now I get it. They raised, they're broke. So very smart, very smart.
You know, a lot of hard money lenders think we're crazy because we don't pool money. And there's some benefit to that, including we can be really flexible.
Yeah.
So we were the first with a sub 7% interest rate on a loan in California too. And then Florida is very different, but we change with the market. Like, we're here. I mean, accessory dwelling units, we have a second program, but that's only because we dug deep.
Yeah. You've changed with the times. And that's what's amazing about you guys is that you're always on top of it. You always have a new program to meet what's coming. And I think you guys had that before it was even popular amongst investors. You guys are like, hey, we're rolling out the ADU. We're rolling out the build to rent. I mean,
let's do it.
It's been amazing.
Well, we're having fun and we're just warning people. I mean, a lot of the investors that we know along the coast that we're doing high end stuff, they've really just got a little bit more conservative, which is great. We're not going anywhere. We're definitely lending. There's a lot of competition in the hard money space.
A lot.
There's a lot of Wall Street lenders. My favorite was talking to a Wall Street company that wanted to buy our notes because they were no longer happy buying a Wall Street lender's notes.
Wow.
So what's really interesting is that it's that local that it seems like even Wall Street understands that there's some expertise that you just can't get into without, you know, boots on the ground. So anyway, so you started in Riverside in 07. You started buying.
I think the house that I'm in, I probably bought. It was actually a foreclosure, which was really weird that I bought that, I think, in like 2003.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a track house. I mean, I'm a simple guy, right? So it's just a 3-bedroom, 2-bath track house.
Okay.
And I actually bought it for fun. I didn't buy it. I bought it just because I wanted depreciation. I didn't even rent it out for like 6 months. I used it as like, because I wanted
you need
to
losses.
I wanted to rent loss. I wanted to learn the business from the ground up. Like I wanted to be, and I wanted to do it because I knew I didn't want to do the work. I wanted to learn it so I could, and I had no, I mean, I'd been on multifamily projects, huge construction sites. So I've been out there and had been exposed to all these different trades, but I didn't really understand from the single family point of view, like what it's a different animal, right? So,
yeah.
So going in and just doing a lot of the work myself and going out to the construction sites and finding a drywall guy and be like, hey, you want to come to my house on Saturday and I'll pay $150 or whatever and come just, you know, help me out and do that. So I would just get guys to come out and it helped me to understand what the actual, what the work involved was, because they say, oh, drywall, but you don't think about it. You got to get the drywall from Home Depot to your house. They're huge sheets. I mean, there's things involved there, right?
And can't put it in the back of your Civic.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it ends up being like at least half, if not more, than your cost of rehab is labor. And you send the guys to Home Depot, it's expensive, right? I mean, they're there. They want to be paid for their time. So I just wanted to be involved. And I get now that having gone to Home Depot, which was all the way at Limonite in the 15, 5 miles back to the house, realizing, oh, I forgot that thing. Back to Home Depot. Yep. You do that a lot when you're rehabbing houses, or your contractors do. So you start to figure that stuff out, right? Having guys that are prepared. And I worked on that house every weekend for probably like 4 or 5, 6 months, I think. I don't remember exactly, but every weekend I was out here in Riverside. Just with I had an awesome set of tools, like Spicoli's dad had an awesome set of tools, thought I could fix. One of my friends came out, and there was like an illegal addition, a garage on the house, and had these workbenches in there that they'd left behind, and all these brand new tools were all laid out, right? And he's just like, man, what
what are you doing?
Yeah, because I own no tools, and now today my goal is to have, I don't even want to own like a screwdriver to fix eyeglasses. I don't want to, like people ask me, like, oh, you rehab a house? I'm like, I have no calluses. No. Like, I just want to master the pen. I don't want to pick up a hammer. I don't want to do that stuff anymore. So.
That's good to know. I learned very early on. I think I remember you and I being part of like a group. We used to have lunch in our old office and
in the bank vault downtown, right?
I got so busy raising money in 2009. I didn't start buying rentals, I think, till 2010.
Still and a good time, though.
It's still a good time. I'm so happy. I tell people I'm a union actor from New York City. And when I retired, like I got my defined benefit statement and I laugh because I'm like, oh, good. When I turn 65, I'm going to get $165 a month. So I was like, I have some catch up to do.
Hey, you could always go back. I mean, they hire elderly people to do that. I don't even know. 65 is not even elderly anymore, right? 65
exactly.
Is like the new.
By the time I get to retire, it's going to be like 80.
Yeah, I saw this great meme. It was like 50 in 1980. And it was like one of the Golden Girls. And 50 today, and it's like Jennifer Lopez on a strip pole swinging around at the Super Bowl,
exactly.
Right? I mean, it's a different time.
Oh, my gosh. 50 is the new 20, apparently.
Yeah, right? It really is.
So this is my first full cycle, and I've learned that I really enjoy being a landlord. Flipping stresses me out. I always overspend. And I am really worried that the accessory dwelling unit thing is going to cause a shortage of labor, and it might happen really quickly
and
catch people
off guard.
Are enough
people doing it? I don't know. I don't really know that much about it.
Yes, there's a lot of... Well, there's two people I'm worried about, the flippers doing rehabs and then builders, because the state law basically says that the cities only have 60 days now. So the ADUs are going to take priority, right? And then you interview some local builders and they find out like some of their permits are taking like a year. And I'm like, man.
I have a horrible story about this. I did a lot split in Riverside. Yeah. I did a lot split. This is why I'm on social media saying fake housing crisis. I did a lot split in Riverside. It was a corner lot. The streets all developed, right? So the main road was, it had houses on it, but the right side was commercial and the left side was all single family.
Okay.
So my house was on the corner and the street going down was all like probably early 90s track housing. So my backyard, since my house was on the corner, the front door was on the main street, my backyard was an extra long backyard. It was two lots on that side street, right? Of all track housing, right? Can you picture that?
Was that town Riverside?
Yeah, and down, in, yeah. No, it was over on Mendoza. and Margarita. Margarita, Mendoza Margarita on the corner there.
Oh, it's so weird. The Strong, there was a very similar situation I was dreaming about splitting. Anyway, sorry.
So while I'm buying the house, the guy is an old blind guy, and he's telling me, I was going to split this lot and build two houses. And if you've been in the business long enough, you hear lots of stories, right? So you're kind of like, yeah, right, okay, that's what you're going to do, right? I mean, why didn't
Good
you?
Good idea.
I'm just going to rehab and sell it. See, he just kept going on and on about how he's good. It's the perfect setbacks, and it's got the depth and the width, and he's just going on. I was just like, maybe there's something to this. So I said, I think I'll just swing by the planning department, building department, and ask some questions. I think I left like 3 hours later. They're like, oh, man, this is a perfect project. You need to go talk to utilities. You need to go talk. And I spent 3 hours there meeting at all these different counters, and I walked out there going, I'm going to split these lots and That's build great. Two houses. And this is an infill project, right?
Yeah.
And everything was perfect. The lots, they had the exact minimum depth, the perfect minimum width. Everything was, the stars completely aligned on this. It took a year and a week to get approval. The same weeds were growing on the lot when I bought it, when I finally got the approval to build on an infill property. And they're bragging, saying, this is the fastest one we've ever done. I'm probably like burning bridges right now because I'm trying to do other development stuff in the city, but it's not their fault. It's really a money grab because I think that cost about $80,000. Why? I have friends in Georgia that will buy a piece of land and break ground within 2 months.
Right.
Same thing with Arizona. They'll buy ground and they're like, oh, we're putting up sticks. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's been 90 days. He's like, yeah, what's the problem? I was like, you don't know where I live. That's crazy.
In Florida, we're helping the people doing 1031 exchange. That's very specific that people it's right for, but it takes 2 months. And why it's so important is that when you're doing a 1031 exchange, you got 180 days. So you can't deal with those kind of timelines. So California is really hard to do build exchanges. So, but I think there's tons of cool opportunity with ADUs and new construction. And it just feels like, well, I might as well jump into it. The iBuyer stuff, what's interesting, there's going to be a lot of hype about it. Zillow has definitely tipped their toe in. So there's four, and they're all active in the Inland Empire.
Oh, yeah.
I think the easy ones are going to get harder. I mean, they do beautiful marketing. They're overspending on stuff, very much like we experience at the trusty sales. It's just you've got Wall Street buyers that are there, they're buying for a different reason.
Oh, they're great people to wholesale to.
Oh, yeah. We have investors
like hotel,
that
you can sell.
Oh, yeah. And I've been complaining at all the data sources. I'm like, your data is going to be off in a year. And they're like, why? I'm like, because I've got wholesalers selling to you guys. And so you've got transactions that are going to show up more than once in the same year, and it's going to screw up the data. Uh-huh. And they're like, oh. But yeah, I think the easy ones are going to get harder. But they're, as far as I can tell right now, they're not taking really big risks with really ugly rehabs yet.
They don't want houses that have tenants in them. They don't want that. So because I have a lot of rentals, they'll contact me and, and they're very vague. There's like, we're interested in buying your house. They don't generally give you an address. So probably in hopes that you'll call and be like, oh, well, I'll sell you this one. One of my called was Sunday, which horrible name. Like, if you're going to come up with a business name, you should come up with something that when you Google it, there's not 10 million results for something else.
Open Door?
Right. I Googled Sunday on the way here just to see. It was like, there's just ice cream. There's nothing mentioned about buying homes. You should have something a little more, like, you want to capture the SEO, you need a good name that.
Very unique.
Yeah, that's unique, like eBay and Google. I mean, these are weird, unique names for a reason, right? Yeah. They're strategic.
Mm-hmm.
So when you come out with Sunday, and I was talking to him, like, I called them, like, well, how did you guys come up with these? Like, oh, I don't know, our CEO just picked it. I was like, what is he like? On a sugar high or something?
No, he's been in the business a really long time.
Oh, I know that, but it's just a very strange thing to do.
I'll have to ask him because I don't know why he came up with that name, because he was very involved in one of the hard money lenders in the Wall Street space for a long time.
I thought he was one of the guys like in Redfin or something. Somebody told me he was one of the partners in one of these other companies.
Lending,
okay.
Some of the other people involved. Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. I know that I got to find out how they're buying, because they're on my radar, but I haven't seen any closes.
Well, they won't do any tenant occupied. They will, but you have to get the tenant out, and they'll advance you like 10 grand, and they're like, oh, we'll have like a 60-day closing, and they just make it a little more. I mean, getting tenants out is not that hard. I think last month I probably evicted five or six people.
Like a boss. Yeah, I follow you on Instagram.
Oh, I throw everybody out. I don't care.
Right. Hardcore.
There's a homeless population because of me.
Oh, geez. Don't brag about that. That's terrible. Well, I mean, just so people know.
Well, to be fair, I'm evicting people who are not paying rent.
Right. No, no, I know. Murrieta was the top iBuyer for Riverside County, and I think in December they only bought 4. So when I'm looking at sales at 209 for the month of December from Ivar. I mean, it's a small fraction, but I like the model. I can definitely see why it's going to stick around. And then we have Keller Williams, EXP, and you've got Compass sort of, and Realogy actually all launching their own versions. So I talked to realtors in that space and they all have just sort of been talking about it, but I haven't seen massive rollout of any iBuyer stuff.
I think that model's interesting. And another model that's starting to, it's starting to take shape. Some little brokerages are doing it, whereas you essentially partner with the homeowner mm-hmm. to rehab and flip their house.
Compass is doing that. Derek Harms was on the radio show a couple weeks ago talking about that.
There's a guy who's got billboards all over the IEs. I'm not going to give him a shout out, but he's doing it. Mm-hmm. There's a couple others. There's a team out of Pasadena that's doing it. So there's other people out there doing it. And I've come up with a name and a model, and we were going to do it. But I've got some other things going on, so I'm holding off on launching it. So I'm always kind of thinking ahead, right? That's like, I have friends in the business that we started at the same time and their net worth just, I mean, it pales. Mine is a fraction of what they're at because they've been very focused, where I've been here more for the entertainment value. I don't really care about money. I honestly don't. I mean, I'm never afraid to lose money. I don't care. I can always go make more. I don't own anything expensive. I'm not materialistic, right? So
yeah,
I just do it for the entertainment, right? I like to see, I think it's just my curiosity. I like to see what I can do. I don't care what anybody says. Ryan and I invented the real estate podcast. There was nobody out there who had it before us.
Really? We started in 07.
Oh, we were way before that.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, Ryan and I were doing the Friday hour free happy noon, whatever it was, conference calls.
Oh,
every
that's
Friday
right.
We did it.
I forgot about
nobody
that.
Nobody was doing that stuff, no. Right? We were doing it every Friday, and nobody. And so people used to say, oh, you should do one of those podcasts. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. Like, what is that? And they're like, yeah, you can. So I was like, record it and put on. I was like, all right, so let's record these, Ryan, and we put them on the website for $1. I think we sold like 7 or something, whatever. I don't know, but. Yeah, so I've always been kind of like, and then we did it for 2 years, and then all these other people, I was like, I'm over that. Let's do something else. Like, so I always kind of like try to do, stand up forefront. Maybe one day I'll hit the big ticket thing.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the hard money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.